Wednesday, September 9th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you are going to get anywhere else. Do you want to be more informed? Do you want a little bit more insightful looks at the world of sports? Do you want a little bit of a sense of humor and maybe some sarcasm in your sports takes? Stick around. You're going to like the show. Today, we have our NFL preview. We are going to be taking a look at every single division, touching briefly on every single team, give you an idea of where I think each team is going to finish and how they are going to do this year. A lot of storylines to keep an eye on. Plus, we got a little bit of college football to talk. We want to talk some college football and some things that happened over the weekend. And as usual, we will bring you our Daily Dose Top 5, a very popular segment here on the Daily Dose Sports Podcast. If you would like to contact me, let's get this stuff out of the way. If you'd like to contact me, hit me up on Twitter. Twitter feed is at Daily Dose Sports, D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose. You can find me there. If you would like to find me on Facebook, I've had a lot of people just try to add me personally. I'm not adding you personally. Add my Daily Dose Sports Facebook page. You'll like that a lot better. Trust me, you don't want to see the stupid things that I'm posting on my personal Facebook. As you know, we take pictures of dinners we eat and stuff like that. You don't want that. Add Daily Dose Sports to your Facebook feed. It'll brighten it up a little bit. If you would like to head over to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com, head over there, check it out, put up new articles, and we have NFL previews going up all this week. We have put up, probably six NFL previews for each division so far. Give you a brief outlook on each team, something that you might like, might want to check out, see how your team is going to do. If you'd like to email the show, and we have received a lot of emails. In fact, we have an email today that we're going to talk about that has influenced our top five today. Email the show, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. If you have some insight, if you have some something you would like to voice to us, if you need some advice, if you need some encouragement, whatever it might be. Emails at dailydosesports@gmail.com. We will take care of you. Like I said, we've got a Daily Dose Top 5 today. It is NFL themed, of course, with this being the NFL preview show. But it's one you don't want to miss. We got an email that I kind of had to address and something that I wanted you to think about. We're going to talk about that here in just a few minutes. A couple things coming out in the world of sports. You probably all saw the ESPN article about the fact that Deflategate was basically kind of a makeup call because of the fact that the New England Patriots had kind of gotten away with the whole Spygate thing, and Spygate was far worse than anyone knew. From 2000 to 2007, apparently the New England Patriots had videotaped the signals of opposing coaches in 40 games, and everyone's kind of talking about Deflategate being seen by some owners as kind of a makeup call for Spygate, which probably wasn't punished as severely as it should have been. Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, his handling of Deflategate still has some people upset. We're going to talk a little bit about that later. I don't want to stick on it. I'll be honest. I'm sick of the Patriots. I'm sick of Tom Brady. I'm sick of Deflategate. I'm sick of that entire thing. I can't stand talking about it. We'll touch on it briefly. And here's the thing that I want to give you when we do talk about it. I'm going to tell you how it all affects you. I'm going to tell you how all of this stuff, all this Deflategate, all this Spygate, all this nonsense going on right now at the Patriots, how it affects you, the football fan. And it does affect you. You might not realize it. Did you see that the NBA is now going to seed their playoff teams solely by record, not by division? It is about time. The tiebreakers, the first two tiebreakers they will go to, one will be head-to-head record, two would be division winner. They won't just go off of, see, I've been saying this for a few years now. Why are you putting in a team that is right around 500 at the four spot because they won their division? I don't care about geography. I got news for you. Geography in sports is really, really irrelevant to me. I want the best teams in. And I want the best teams, seated the highest so that we get the best teams in the finals. Good to see the NBA starting to make a little bit of sense at times. Serena Williams outlasted her sister Venus last night at the U.S. Open. Serena is going for a grand slam and had to get by Venus. You know, Serena Williams is probably one of the more underrated athletes that is out there. We don't talk a lot about her, and I think it's because she doesn't have great competition to play against. But Serena Williams, probably the greatest female tennis player ever. Yes, I know the company that's out there. I know the Navratilovas. I know the Everts. I know the people that are out there. Serena, she's just dominating. The thing that hurts Serena Williams the most is the fact that she doesn't have great competition to play against. It's nothing she can do about that, but she just hasn't had the greatest competition to play against. She doesn't have that huge rival that you say, oh, well, you know, she's beat this person. She's beat this person. She has this big rival. Just, she doesn't have that. And did you see over the weekend the Texas high school referee that got blasted by two players? The players apparently disagreed with one of the calls that the official made. And so when the play started, they just lowered their helmets and speared the official. The players have been removed from the school and the team. They are looking at pressing charges against these two individuals. And apparently, an assistant coach for the football team told these players, he made a bad call that hurt us. Make sure you go get him. Oh, yeah, that won't have any implications whatsoever. Way to ruin your life. Good job. As usual, the adults screwing things up for the kids. Not that the kids in this are innocent. They obviously aren't the brightest fellows in the world. Let's talk a little bit about college football. Let's jump in, because I got a lot to get to. I got to get to the whole NFL preview thing. Let's jump in. Looking at college football, and I watched a lot of college football over the weekend. We did our college football preview last week. If you have not seen your favorite college football team, go check out dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can probably see a preview of one of your teams. A few winners I want to talk about, and a few losers I want to talk about over the first weekend of college football. Winners, first and foremost, I got to give it to Ohio State. You know, Ohio State was the unanimous number one in all the polls. They were my personal number one. I don't know if you know this. You might not know this. But we actually do release a Daily Dose top five college football teams. Started that last week. We kind of a power ranking of college football top fives. If you want to go check that out, rank each one of the teams. Who would get in if we had the playoffs today? And who is just outside of that? Go check that out. Ohio State, the Daily Dose number one team right now, and was the number one team in basically every single publication. And you know what? We looked at them on Monday night, and they're actually pretty good. Hey, isn't that surprising? Yeah, they've got a ton of talent. And you know what? A lot of that talent wasn't even playing because they had a few wide receivers. They had their best defensive player out on suspension. And they played a pretty good Virginia Tech team that has a pretty good defense and, to be honest, kind of throttled them in the second half. Ohio State going to be very, very tough to beat this season. One of the other winners this weekend had to be the SEC. The SEC was definitely a winner this weekend. South Carolina beats North Carolina. Not a huge... Did you watch that game? Because, you know, we talked about this previously. North Carolina was a team that I kind of have down as could kind of surprise some people. And they should have won that game. But quarterback Marquise Williams, who I had been standing up for, saying this kid could get it going. Is this kid on the take? What did he have? 3 red zone interceptions? I told you a couple weeks ago, I know North Carolina is filthy. We've seen the dirty things that go on there, the cheating scandals and the paying players scandals. Even Roy Williams is involved in some kind of academic scandal or something back there. Marquise Williams? I don't know. 3 turnovers right in the end zone. Come on, buddy. Do you remember what team you're playing for? And the teams both wore their home uniforms. So it wasn't like, well, I was just thinking we were wearing the whites. No, you're light blue and they were wearing the black. Really? Anyways, SEC had a great weekend. Yes, Vanderbilt lost to Western Kentucky, whatever. But Auburn beat Louisville, and Louisville's a pretty good team. I mean, they looked like they were pretty legit, and they look like they might be good all season. We'll see how that goes. Their offense was a lot better than I thought. Texas A&M beat number 15 Arizona State. And totally outmatched them. And Arizona State looked very, very good going into the season. A&M throttled them. Alabama smacked Wisconsin 35-17. SEC was a big winner this weekend in college football. One other winner. Well, sort of. Notre Dame. Notre Dame looked very, very good against Texas. Or Texas looked really, really awful against Notre Dame. It was one of the two. I don't know. Here is the bad news. Notre Dame lost running back Torian Folston, was their leading rusher a year ago. And you know, I told you last week, I think Notre Dame is really talented. But this win hurts a little bit. That kind of stings a little bit because you just lost a very good player. And I told you, they may have to adapt to more of a running type offense. Losing your best, you know, running back does not help whatsoever. Let's switch over to losers. Loser number one, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. I told you last week, I did not like the hire of Mike Riley. They play BYU at Nebraska. Game's kind of back and forth. Nebraska takes the lead late. BYU with their backup quarterback, because their starter gets hurt and is out for the season, goes down, gets, you know, if what, 40, 50-yard line, and they're going to throw the Hail Mary. Now, I'm watching this game with some friends. And as I'm watching this game, there's one last play to go. I think there were 6 seconds left. There's one last play to go. And Mike Riley is on the sideline, and I see some assistant coaches coming over to him and kind of giving him the handshake and like, this is a tough one, but at least we got, you know, this one out of the way. And I even said to the people I was with, I said, they think this game is over. I realize it probably is, but you might want to coach one more play. This game's not over. BYU throws the Hail Mary, makes the catch, touchdown BYU, Nebraska loses their opener. Now, Nebraska, are they going to, you know, they have the black shirts, the defense wears the black, are they going to take the black shirts away? They take the black shirts away like once a week at that school anymore. Remember when the black shirts used to actually mean something back at Nebraska? Like, I remember back in the I don't know, 80s, 90s, and they had the defensive, you know, the defense in practice wears their black shirts, and they're the black shirts, and it means the defense. And then if they didn't have a good week, they'd take away the black. They get their black shirts taken away every single week. Nebraska had a rough week. The Pac-12 didn't have a particularly good week, folks. The Pac-12 struggled a little bit. I don't know where you want to start. We could start with Stanford. I also told you last week, Stanford quarterback Kevin Hogan should be good, but doesn't always actually play well. On Saturday, 20 for 35 for 153 yards and an interception versus Northwestern. Northwestern, the nerds of the Big Ten, a team that spent its offseason unionizing, not like lifting weights and throwing passes and you know, hitting the blocking sleds, unionizing. They managed to beat Stanford and Kevin Hogan. Kevin Hogan looks like he should be quarterback. He fills out a uniform very well. He just doesn't play particularly well. I told you last week I was worried about him. Washington lost to Boise State. Arizona State, of course, like I said, probably the best team that Todd Graham thought that he had at Arizona State. They go down. Stanford goes down. Washington State lost to Portland State. And Oregon, yes, they managed to win and beat Eastern Washington 61-42. But Oregon allowed 549 yards in that game. That's gonna probably signify some bad things coming for Oregon. Oh, and Colorado. Is Colorado a Pac-12 team? I think they're still in the Pac-12, right? They lost to Hawaii 28-20. Oh, I know, Buff fan. I know. The ref bobbled that ball when you were trying to run your hurry-up offense to try to tie up Hawaii with a late-game touchdown. But you were down to Hawaii late. There's no excuse. I don't care what the ref did late. Yes, they probably got the call wrong. If you didn't see it, CU was hurrying to the line of scrimmage to try to run one more play in the game. The ref kind of bobbled the ball, dropped it, clock ran out. Hey, you shouldn't be down by 8 to Hawaii ever. And you know, I'm in Colorado. And so, you know, I hear a lot from the, you know, Colorado was talking about they were going to be in the bowl this year. And now we have, you know, Colorado State talking down. Slow down, Colorado State. You beat Savannah State this weekend. Savannah State hasn't won a game since like 2013. Easy. College football in this state is just so horrible. Another kind of a loser this weekend was Clemson. Clemson beat Wofford 49-10, but they lost 1,000-yard wide receiver Mike Williams to a neck injury. Really, really scary neck injury. If you didn't see it, trying to make a catch at the back of the end zone, kind of gets a shove at the back, and his head goes right into the goalpost. Ended up, he has a small fracture in his, I guess in his vertebrae, but it isn't anything that's going to keep him from playing somewhere down the road in the future, probably gone for the season, but at least should be back. The last loser I want to give you from college football this year, and then we're going to jump into the NFL preview. Can we stop having these Division I schools schedule the FCS 1AA schools? I know we're not supposed to call them 1AA anymore, but the little schools got beat this week. 228-32. Missouri beat Southeast Missouri State 34-3. Clemson, like I said, beat Wofford 49-10. Ole Miss 76, Tennessee Martin 3. Georgia Tech 69, Alcorn State 6. I understand that college football doesn't allow for preseason games, but you can't schedule FCS 1AA schools. They have to be 1A FBS schools, or they shouldn't count. And I know that the FCS schools, it's not like, you know, they're completely innocent. They want the paycheck that they're going to get from the gate. But can we kind of look at the safety and the competition a little? I know. It's crazy to think about the kids. What am I thinking here? Actually thinking about the kids that might get hurt playing against the big boys. But these games shouldn't count. Can we get rid of these stupid games? All right. Enough college football. Let's jump into the NFL, because that is why we are here today. We are going to talk some NFL football. You know, let's get to that real reason that you're here. The NFL just dominates every other sport. And I know we have these factions in different areas around the country where some sports are bigger than others, but did you hear that Americans are going to bet $95 billion on NFL football this year? Just absolutely insane. So far in 2015, the 10 most watched television events, 9 NFL games, and the college football national championship game, which came in at number 7. The NFL draft, I mean, just picking teams. Remember when you were a kid and you'd go out to the playground and you're like, oh, let's pick up teams. Okay, I got you and you got you. The NFL draft doing that beat the college basketball Elite Eight, beat the NBA Western Conference Finals, and beat Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals. The NFL absolutely drives sports in the United States. And I want to go through just a couple of storylines for you to keep in mind this year as we get into the season. A couple of the big storylines that I think are the ones that we're just going to kind of want to watch. First off, the New England Patriots. Of course, the biggest story. I want to brush on this. I don't want to stick on this. Can they actually play with, you know, footballs that have air in them? Last week, a judge ruled in favor of Tom Brady's appeal versus the NFL in the Deflategate case. Judge said that the NFL has no right to be judge and jury and suspend, players for games when they hadn't agreed to these terms in the CBA. I told you back in February, Brady was not going to serve any time. That didn't come as any kind of a surprise to me. I thought the NFL did a horrible job of presenting evidence that the Patriots had cheated. The Wells report, it allowed, just so much deniability. But here's the thing. Can I tell you where this is headed? I told you this stuff's going to affect you, NFL fan. And no, I don't mean the NFL appeal, because now Roger Goodell and the NFL say they're going to appeal that decision, and then it's going to appeal that decision, they're going to appeal that decision. That's not what I'm talking about. Because I mean long term. See, allowing the NFL commissioner to be judge and jury, guaranteed contracts, all this stuff was on the table at the NFL lockout back in 2011. And the NFL players cracked because they were missing paychecks. Now, remember, we've talked about this a little bit before. Chris Rock said it best. There's a difference between rich and wealthy. NFL players might be rich, but they still have to do what the wealthy owners tell them to do. Now, I don't know much. I might not be a very smart guy, but I know that wealthy people, like the NFL owners, don't like losing money. So how does this ruling that the NFL is no longer able to rule in these player discipline cases going to affect, you as a sports fan? It's not going to affect Brady. That ruling, yes, he gets to play these 4 games, but that's very, very short term. That's not what I'm talking about. It's not going to affect Ray Rice. It's probably not even going to affect Bill Belichick. Maybe, possibly. But there's something coming. See, the current CBA expires after the 2020 season. And I'm telling you right now, NFL Armageddon is coming. There is a lot of hate right now for Roger Goodell. Don't forget this. He's doing exactly what the NFL owners want him to do. And in 2021, the owners are going to push for more control. The players are going to be pushing for more guaranteed money. They're going to be pushing for, we want pretty much whatever we want. We don't want to practice very much. We want very minimum hitting, but we want more money. We want our money guaranteed. I'm telling you right now, it is September 9th, 2015. There will be blood in 2021. Don't say you didn't know, because I'm telling you right now, there's probably not going to be a 2021 season. That's probably going to be gone. Now let's get back to the Patriots this year. They have lost a lot of talent, lost a lot of defense, lost so many wide receivers that they signed Reggie Wayne. I told you, I think last week, 2 weeks ago maybe, that I had watched some film of Reggie Wayne last year, and he had absolutely nothing left. Yeah, apparently I was right. They cut him on Saturday. But can the Patriots contend again? There's a lot of pressure on the New England Patriots this year. Because with all of the talk, with all of the, were they cheating? Were they getting this, the footballs illegally, whatever, might have been going on. If they come out this year and they struggle, everyone's going to say, oh yeah, it's because of that stuff. A lot of pressure on them to perform this year. One other team to keep an eye on storylines this year. Can the Seattle Seahawks bounce back? You know, the last time a losing Super Bowl team got back to the Super Bowl and won it? The Miami Dolphins back in 1973. It just doesn't happen. And I don't know if it's hangover, if it's just that the emotional stress of going through the loss or what that is. But a team that has lost the Super Bowl hasn't even been back to a Super Bowl since the Buffalo Bills back in 93, and they just lost again. Seattle looks like one of the best teams in the NFC, but history says they're not going to get back to the Super Bowl again this year. Maybe that changes. Keep an eye on that. Who moves into the playoffs this year? And who moves out of the playoffs this year? You know, every single year, we see teams in the NFL that made the playoffs kind of drop out. And whether it's injuries, a tougher schedule, just complacency among their roster, whatever it might be, something to keep in mind. Last year, teams that got in, the Patriots, the Broncos, the Steelers, the Colts, the Bengals, and the Ravens on the AFC side. A few of those teams aren't getting in this year. I've got news for you. On the NFC side, the Seahawks, the Packers, the Cowboys, the Panthers, the Cardinals, and the Lions. Some of those teams are not going to get in. So who drops out? Every year at this time, we kind of look back at last year and we say, oh, well, yeah, it's going to go exactly how last year went. Oh, yeah, all those same teams, yeah, they're all going to get it. That's not how that works. Teams drop out, teams move in. And so, while they might look like the 12 best teams again right now, it's not going to happen that way. It never does. And so when we go through the preview, you might look at it and say, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm going to try to give you a couple teams that I think could get in and a couple teams that might be dropping. A couple teams to keep in mind have coaches that could be on the hot seat. Miami Dolphins, Joe Philbin. Miami has invested a lot of money in that roster. Not sure if Joe Philbin is the guy. If they don't get it done, there is some pressure on Philbin. If he doesn't get it done, they're probably going to be looking somewhere else. Does Marvin Lewis with Cincinnati have any pressure on him? This is the guy that skates apparently no matter what, but you'd have to think they've got to start looking at Marvin Lewis at some point. You got to win a playoff game sometime, don't you, Cincinnati? I know another guy that probably just has as much rope as he wants. Jason Garrett down at Dallas. I want to talk a little bit about Dallas here in a few minutes. If Dallas were to struggle this year and have a major drop off from what they did a year ago, could Jason Garrett be in trouble? Tom Coughlin over with the New York Giants. Another guy that, when you have two Super Bowls, it certainly helps your credibility. It certainly helps you get brought back the next year. But if the Giants struggle yet again this year, could Tom Coughlin be in trouble? The Redskins, Jay Gruden, I think with the removal of Robert Griffin III, a lot of pressure on Jay Gruden. You better perform with Kirk Cousins, Colt McCoy, Joe Theismann, Billy Kilmer, whoever it is you're going to plug into that horrible Washington starting job. Jay Gruden, you've got a little bit of pressure on you. Lastly, does the Saints' Sean Payton have any pressure on him? I know he's won a Super Bowl. They really struggled last year, failed to make the playoffs. You know, obviously they have their own issues down there with some of the things, and Sean Payton gets suspended for a year. Boy, he has to be mad about this whole Deflategate thing and Bill Belichick just getting in all of this. Sean Payton didn't know anything about Bountygate, and he got booted out for a year. Anyways, any pressure on Sean Payton? Something to keep in mind. Let's jump in to our NFL preview. We're going to start over on the AFC East. And I'm just going to go in order of the way that I think the teams are going to finish. But over in the AFC East, I'm going to start off with the New England Patriots. They added a little bit of defensive line help. But the New England Patriots have lost some people. They lost Darrell Revis. They lost Brandon Browner. They lost Vince Wilfork. They're also running out of wide receivers. I know their wide receivers should be healthy a little bit later. I know Edelman and those guys should be back a little bit later. Their offensive line is not great, and their offensive guards particularly could be an issue. They should still win the East for one reason, and that reason is that who's the second-best quarterback in the division? After Tom Brady, who is the second-best quarterback? Ryan Tannehill? Steve Tannehill? Matt Castle? I have no idea. Based on that, I'll put the Patriots at number one in the AFC East. Number two, I'm gonna go with the Buffalo Bills. You know, the Bills went out and they got Rex Ryan. And I will say this about Rex Ryan. He knows defense. And he has won. He has a history of winning. He knows something about coaching bad quarterbacks. I'm not saying he's gonna fix their quarterbacks. I'm just saying everywhere he goes, he always has terrible quarterbacks. That's just kind of, you know, how it is. Mark Sanchez, Geno Smith, now he has Tyrod Taylor. Yeah, this all seems to just go together perfectly. I will say this, the Bills defense, though, is very, very good. Fourth in the NFL. They just need to get a little bit of offense. They did get LeSean McCoy. I'm not a huge LeSean McCoy fan. I think he dances around too much, but he can be very, very, very explosive. If you give him a gap, he will get through it. I'm going to put the Bills at number two, and I think they have a chance to move into that playoff spot. I know. I can't even believe I'm saying that. It's been, what, since 1999 or something since they got in the playoffs? Maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year the Bills actually get in. Number three in the AFC East, and I think this is going to be a very tight race right here, the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins went out and got Ndamukong Suh. So leg stomp suspensions will probably go up by 200%. He needs to get this inconsistent Dolphins defense to step up. In games that the Miami Dolphins lost, and they went 8-8, they tended to end up giving up big points. There's way too much talent on this defense to be giving up big points. And they've got to be more consistent about stopping the run. And then on the other side, you know, for all we hear about Ryan Tannehill, he's so talented. He can do this. He's got all the tools. They're really average on offense. I do think that Bill Lazor's offense this year could help him. Bill Lazor came in as the offensive coordinator. He's going to run a little bit more of an up-tempo, I guess kind of a Chip Kelly-type offense. That might help Miami get over the hump, and maybe Miami could, you know, step into that race and challenge Buffalo and New England. I think those three teams are going to be a very tight race over in the AFC East. Number four in the division, I will go with the New York Jets. You know, the Jets ranked sixth in total defense last year. Pretty good defense. But they were 24th in scoring defense. Wait, what? That doesn't even make any sense. Well, it does, because their offense is so terrible that they put their defense in just bad positions. And so in the offseason, you sit there and say, okay, well, our defense is pretty good. Let's shore up our offense a little bit, and we won't put our defense in such terrible positions. So what did the Jets do? They went out and they drafted defensive lineman Leonard Williams. And then they got Darrell Revis to come back, and they got Antonio Cromartie to come back. And it doesn't even make any sense. Your offense is still horrible. Your starting quarterback is going to be Ryan Fitzpatrick and his big giant beard. I can't figure out that. I guess this is logic in Jets land, but it makes absolutely you know, no sense to me. Let's shift over to the NFC East. Over in the East, you know, last year the Cowboys managed to win. This year in the NFC East, I am going to go with Philadelphia Eagles. You know, they added DeMarco Murray, and I like what he brings to a Chip Kelly type offense, because we know he's going to go forward. Then they traded Nick Foles for Sam Bradford. Now, Sam Bradford could really help the Eagles if he's healthy. He's extremely accurate. I've never actually seen him be healthy, but I don't know, like Bigfoot or something. I guess it could happen. I guess it might be real. It seems like the Eagles' defense is starting to improve a little bit slowly. If they are going to, if they get better, if that defense actually comes together and isn't giving up, you know, 25, 28 points a game, Eagles could win the NFC East. Number two in that division, I like the Dallas Cowboys. You know, last year for a change, just to kind of switch things up, the Dallas Cowboys didn't go 8-8. Yay! They changed it up. But you know what? They changed what they did. They ran the ball. They took the pressure off of Tony Romo to have to win games late. Here's something I want you to think about. From 2006 to 2013 with Tony Romo, the Cowboys passed 62% of their plays. Last year, that dropped to 51.8%, and they went 12-4. They made it to the divisional playoffs. They lost, you know, the heartbreaker to the Green Bay Packers. So isn't it just like the Cowboys this year to get all full of themselves and be like, well, I guess we don't need DeMarco Murray. Tony Romo's fine, and we can start throwing the ball again. We've got it all figured out. They went and got Darren McFadden. Yeah, he'll be hurt. I think he was signed directly to the injury report. I don't understand what the Dallas Cowboys are doing. They're going to go back to what, passing and outscoring people? And once again, every year, I just keep thinking Jerry Jones is going to start himself at quarterback at some point. It's got to happen, doesn't it? It has to happen. Next up in the NFC East, I will go with the New York Giants. You know, the Giants had so many injuries last year. Think about some of the injuries that they sustained. Victor Cruz was out. Victor Beeson was out. Prince Kamara was out. Rashad Jennings, you know, their starting running back was out. It's a new year. And gone is that 6-10 season a year ago when they lost so many players due to injury. Finally, the Giants are going to start taking their health a little more seriously. Just ask Jason Pierre-Paul, who, by the way, today left the New York Giants complex without a contract. So we'll see how that all plays out. They can't be that injured again, can they? Aren't they about due to, I don't know, like win the Super Bowl again? It seems like they do that every few years. Always interesting to keep an eye on the New York Giants. Number four in the NFC East, have to go with the dreadful Washington Redskins. You know, the RG3, I understand he has issues. But here's the thing. It's not just him. The offensive line is horrible. The defense is very, very bad. Washington has at least a chance to be the worst team in the NFL. I don't know if they'll get it done, but they at least have a chance. They just have to, you know, focus a little bit. Let's shift over to the AFC North. Jump over to the AFC North real quick. First in that division. It hurts me a little bit to put this out there. I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. They lost their offensive coordinator, Gary Kubiak, to Denver, and Kubiak had Joe Flacco playing really, really well. The Ravens also lost a few other people. They lost tight end Owen Daniels, they lost Jacoby Jones, and they lost Haloti Ngata. They're going to need some wide receivers to step up. But don't forget that the Baltimore Ravens gave the New England Patriots their closest game in the playoffs out of the AFC. So I'm going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. Number two in that division, I'm going to go with the Pittsburgh Steelers. There are some big, big changes for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, their defensive coordinator, Dick LeBeau, and his 3-4 defense are gone after like 147 years or something. The Steelers defense has been going downhill for a few years. They are going to have to rely on, you know, Ben Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell to just outscore people as they convert over to a 4-3, you know, in their new defensive scheme. They're going to miss their center, Marquise Pouncey, who went out just a couple weeks ago with that ankle injury, that lower leg break, I guess it was. We've seen in the past, if Big Ben isn't getting protection, he can tend to stand in the pocket too long, take some really big hits, force some bad passes. I like the Steelers. I think that they could be a surprise team, maybe find a way to sneak into the playoffs. I just think they're going to be relying on that offense too much, and the offense has some holes in it. I know the defense has some issues, but that offense has some holes in it too. Number three in the AFC North, I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bengals have talent. When you look at some of their skill position players, you've got running back Jeremy Hill, who really came out last year and showed what he's capable of. You've got running back Giovanni Bernard, kind of a change of pace pass. He can do some different things. You've got wide receiver AJ Green. You've got Marvin Jones. You have some talent back there at the skill positions for the Cincinnati Bengals. Their defense is just inconsistent. And Andy Dalton, the Red Rifle, he already looks like he's in like playoff mode right now in preseason. Like, there are like rumors circulating back in Cincinnati. Should they just sit Dalton down? I don't know. He doesn't even look like he knows what he's doing. The Bengals have a lot of talent. They just, I don't know if Dalton's the guy. I thought when he was, I'll be honest, when he was coming out of TCU, I thought Dalton, he had a chance to be pretty good. Is it the hair? Is it the red hair? Is it because he's a ginger? Is that why I'm biased against him? I don't know what it is. But I don't like Cincinnati's chances. If they could somehow figure out to get, you know, some consistent defense and some consistent quarterback play out of Dalton, maybe they'd have a chance. Number four in the AFC North, I will go with the Cleveland Browns. You know, the offensive line is improving. They have gotten some people to beef up that offensive line. The problem is that you're protecting Josh McCown, so I don't know if that's really a good thing to have a good offensive line. Maybe you'd rather have a bad offensive line. You know, they don't have any skill position players. Quick, name a Browns running back. Yeah, did you give up? Isaiah Crowell, Terrence West, I rest my case. I don't even know these guys. Defense is tough to score against. They bend a lot, but they actually don't break. So that at least hopefully would keep Cleveland competitive. I don't think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league, maybe. But they've got to get some consistent quarterback. But I fully expect Johnny Manziel, if it's not an issue, you know, with his elbow or whatever they're saying, I fully expect him to be playing by probably week 3 or 4. Let's head over to that black and blue division, the NFC North. You know, the NFC North should be very, very competitive, especially at the top. First in that division, I'm going to go with the Green Bay Packers. I know that they lost Jordy Nelson, but Aaron Rodgers is such an amazing quarterback. He can overcome that. You know, the thing about Aaron Rodgers that makes him so good, and sometimes he doesn't get credit for, obviously dude is completely unafraid to chuck it down the field. That's not the thing that makes Aaron Rodgers so good. Aaron Rodgers is also unafraid to check down, find the right guy, and just take, you know, the 2 or 3 yards. And he has that mentality of, okay, well, what are we going to do on the next play? Let's get it on the next play if we have to. He's not going to force it. He's not going to take the big loss. He'll check down, take what he needs to, and then he'll move forward to the next play. And so many times, that is what is important. I think the Packers, I like the Packers to go to the Super Bowl out of the NFC. If you were going to put a gun in my head, I'd probably go Packers versus Colts in the Super Bowl. But there could be a team or two other than that that could sneak in. But they are my pick. I know they're going to have to overcome Jordy Nelson and the chemistry that he had, you know, with Aaron Rodgers. But I think if their defense can step up, especially their run defense, which has not always been great, if the Packers defense can step up, they could be winning the NFC North and possibly winning bigger and better. You have to feel for the way that they went down in that AFC or the NFC Championship last game. Of last year, you know, obviously losing the way they did to the Seahawks. Number two in the NFC North, I really like the Detroit Lions. Yes, they lost Ndamukong Suh. They lost Nick Fairley. But they got Haloti Ngata, and he's pretty good on the defensive line. You know, the Lions, they make the playoffs when their defense is good. Because it seems like the Lions always have like a ton of offense. But you can't play defense and be put in bad spots with your defense. Last year, head coach Jim Caldwell got Matt Stafford to limit his mistakes. Here's the catch for the Lions that makes me a little bit concerned. And I heard from some Lions fans this week, they weren't real happy that, I don't know, I guess I didn't have the Lions go undefeated. I said that their offensive line isn't great. As a result, their run game sometimes struggles. Their quarterback, Matt Stafford, sometimes gets crushed a lot. They're going to have to change that a little bit. Because as long as their offense isn't putting their defense in bad positions, their defense is good enough to get stops. I know, their preseason run game looked great. Slow down. You don't exactly have Barry Sanders, you know, just yet. I don't know what that means that your run game looked better in the preseason. Maybe it's a sign of better things to come. Maybe it was just preseason. Number three in the NFC North, I like the Minnesota Vikings. You know, Teddy Bridgewater, he had a solid rookie season. But the thing that stood out to me more about Teddy Bridgewater was that he seemed to get better later in the season. Now he gets Adrian Peterson back. The defense is solid. It's not great. Could the Vikings make the playoffs? Do the Vikings have the kind of talent that could get them into the playoffs? They've got to play versus the AFC West and the NFC West. That's going to be a lot tougher than what they had last year. If things could fall right, the Vikings could sneak their way in fourth in that last spot. I will put the Chicago Bears. You know, running back Matt Forte is a beast. Do you realize Matt Forte is just the third player in NFL history to rush for 1,000 yards and catch 100 passes in the same season? Pretty impressive. Matt Forte is the real deal. It's just too bad he has to play, you know, every week with Jay Cutler. Let's jump over to the AFC South. The AFC South, not a great division. Let's be real honest. And it's kind of funny. I posted the AFC South preview the other day, and I had some fans that weren't very happy. First and foremost, the Indianapolis Colts, they should probably be the best team in the AFC. Let's be honest. They improved their talent from a team last year that went to the AFC Championship. They put some people around Andrew Luck, and Andrew Luck is really, really good. I mean, this was the third best offense last year. They didn't have very many players. They had T.Y. Hilton and Andrew Luck. That was it. Now, they've added Andre Johnson at wide receiver. They've added Frank Gore. I know he's 50, but he still runs hard. The questions for the Colts are all going to be on defense. Their rush defense allowed 113 yards per game. That's going to have to get a little bit better, because otherwise teams are just going to run it down your throat and keep the ball away from Luck. Interesting to see how the Colts will do. Like I said, the Colts are probably my pick to go to the Super Bowl from the AFC. Have to see if they can shore some things up, and if their offense, if the weapons they got, because the weapons they got are aging. Andre Johnson and Frank Gore could be good, would be a lot better if this was 2008 or 9. Number two in the AFC South, I'll go with the Houston Texans. You know, they almost made the playoffs last year at 9-7, and they didn't have a quarterback. Texans defense was first in turnovers caused. Can they repeat that? Can you finish first again in turnovers caused? I think they might have to, because their offense this year might actually be worse. They don't have Andre Johnson. They don't have Arian Foster. They don't have a quarterback. J.J. Watt would be better off playing quarterback than Brian Hoyer. They just don't have anybody. Texans offense is bad. Third in the AFC South, it doesn't even matter. I'll go with the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, I keep hearing how good Blake Bortles is. You know, they drafted him, out of Central Florida last year. It was his first year. To me, he looked like he was completely lost. I don't see it. But I guess he fits in with Jacksonville, because the rest of that franchise is lost too. So I actually had some Jacksonville fans angry at me that I didn't pick Jacksonville to win the AFC South. I don't know if I could pick Jacksonville in a single game ever. That franchise, they'll be headed to London or Oakland or somewhere soon. Fourth in the division, and honestly, Jaguars and Titans, they're probably going to tie at like 5-11. The Tennessee Titans. You know, the Titans have been the most uninteresting, boring team in the NFL for probably the past 3 or 4 seasons. This year, they drafted quarterback Marcus Mariota out of Oregon. Mariota he's a good kid. He's a leader. He has a really, really good work ethic. And it makes the Titans a little bit interesting. If the Tennessee Titans are on TV tonight, because of Marcus Mariota, I might actually watch a minute or two of them. Now, here's the problem. Their offense and their defense are pretty terrible. So it doesn't make them any good. But at least, you know, makes it a little more interesting. The NFC South, let's jump over to the South. First in this division, the NFC South, every year, doesn't it seem like we get like a 7-9 team coming out of the NFC South to go into the playoffs? Who's it going to be this year? Who's going to go 8-8 this year out of the NFC South and get into the playoffs? I'll go number one. I'll go with the New Orleans Saints. And this entire division is just a complete crapshoot. So I'll go with who is the best quarterback in the division. And for me, I'll go with Drew Brees with the New Orleans Saints. You know, they lost Jimmy Graham, but their offensive line, because they did make that trade, they picked up Max Unger, who is a very, very good center. Their offensive line should be a little bit better. They've drafted some offensive line help. It seems like that is improving. Drew Brees just has to remember what color jersey he's wearing each week. Last year, Drew Brees threw 17 interceptions. And I know Drew Brees has always been that guy that he is either really, really good or really, really bad. Because he has the ultimate belief in his arm. He has the ultimate belief that I am going to put this ball in there, despite the fact that there are eight defensive backs around. I don't know. You can't turn it over. Because we know the Saints defense is going to be awful. That's just how that works. Drew Brees, you can't have that many turnovers. I don't know if that's a sign that Brees is kind of falling off and that's kind of the end of the road for him. I think he's probably got a few more years left in him. I'm going to go with the Saints at number one. Number two, I'm going to go with this team. Let me ask you a question. I want you to think about this. Quick little stat for you. What quarterback trails only Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and Tom Brady in quarterback rating since 2008? It is Matt Ryan. The problem with the Atlanta Falcons is they don't have much of a running game. They run about 93 yards per game. Remember when the Atlanta Falcons used to be the running team in the NFL? The offensive line is just so bad. So Matt Ryan, and as bad as the offensive line is, and it is bad, the Atlanta Falcons defense is actually worse than that offensive line. So, you know, good luck, Matty Ice. You're probably going to need a lot of ice at the end of every single game. Number three, and maybe I'm reading too much into this. I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers. Last year, the Panthers actually repeated as the NFC South champions. There's no way they could do it three times in a row, right? I barely knew they did it two times in a row because I thought they looked awful for most of the season. Their defense is pretty good. They've got Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis, very, very good linebacker tandem. They, of this division, they've actually got some defense. They will miss Greg Hardy, who left, you know, the whole issue with the law and ended up in Dallas, whatever. They will miss Greg Hardy. They probably won't miss him as, you know, as a person. I'm not saying that, but they're going to miss Greg Hardy and what he brought to the field. But this offense is going to struggle, and they're going to struggle a lot. They were struggling already. And now losing wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin just makes it worse because we know Cam Newton is a little bit flaky. He's kind of that hot and cold guy, and a lot of his passes, let's be honest, we don't really know where any of them are going. It helped to have a big wide receiver like Kelvin Benjamin out there to go pull stuff down. Does not have that this year. And then last in the NFC South, I will go with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, the Buccaneers drafted Jameis Winston, and they have some weapons. I mean, think about what they have, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You've got running back Doug Martin. Solid. He's not great. You've got big wide receivers in Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson. Big, strong wide receivers that can go get the football. And Jameis Winston, probably the most pro-ready quarterback in the NFL draft this past season. Here's the problem. Tampa Bay probably has the worst offensive line in the NFL. The defense is not very good. Very mediocre defense. So Jameis Winston is going to get beat up a lot. And I guess it's going to come down to whether he's ready or not. Can you complete passes and convert third downs and make scoring drives when you're laying on your back? Because I think that's what's going to happen to Jameis Winston this season a lot. That offensive line is just bad. It's just bad. Let's jump over to the AFC West. I know being here in Denver, you know, a lot of people, a lot of Bronco fans listening here. I'm here in Denver, so I get bombarded with Denver Bronco talk like 24/7. Like, it doesn't matter. It could be mid-April, and it could be, you know, NBA, you know, playoffs or whatever. It's Bronco talk here in Denver. It's like a college town with this franchise here in Denver. And you know the radio announcers and the people that are, they live in a city and they end up just hating the local team that's there because it just gets shoved down their throat all the time. Well, that's not me, because the Broncos are going to the Super Bowl and y'all can suck it. I don't care. I'm kidding. I'm partially kidding. You know, the Broncos are undergoing massive changes. This is going to be a very, very different offense. Because gone is that wide open Peyton Manning offense throwing it all over the field. Hello, West Coast offense, zone blocking scheme, offensive linemen, making their block, trying to get to the next level, one cut and go running back stuff. It's going to be very, very different. And this defense could be very, very improved. Defensive coordinator Wade Phillips. I know he's not a head coach, but defensive coordinator Wade Phillips will be drawing up some nasty blitzes from all over the field. And when you think of some of the people that he has to blitz with, DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller, rookie Shane Ray, those cornerbacks for the Denver Broncos, Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr., that might be the best corner duo in the league. The offensive line is what would concern me if you're a Denver Bronco fan. That offensive line, you've got some very, very inexperienced players that are going to be playing a lot of minutes protecting Peyton Manning's blind side. Can Peyton Manning adapt to the new system? That's going to be, you know, the ultimate thing to keep an eye on for the Denver Broncos. I do think they win the AFC West because I just think they have so much talent. Number two in the AFC West, I would go with the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, the thing about quarterback Alex Smith, he just doesn't turn it over. And do you know how he doesn't turn it over? Well, simple. He just doesn't throw the ball. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs were 25th in pass attempts since 2012. They just don't throw the ball. Here's the thing when you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. If you let them stay ahead and down in distance, if they're getting their 4 yards a pop, they're going to beat you. They're going to beat you. If you can get them in some of those third and longs, if you can get that down in defense where it's not quite as manageable and they can't just run Jamaal Charles down your throat and they can't just let Alex Smith do the play action rollout and you know, hit his tight ends because we know he, you know, doesn't really throw to wide receivers at all, then you'll have a chance and you can force a lot of punts. But I think the Kansas City Chiefs are a playoff team. They don't turn it over. The defense is improving. They need to stay healthy. Obviously, Jamaal Charles last year missed some time. It was just kind of dinged up all year. I expect the Chiefs to be in the playoffs. I can't see how they pass the Broncos. Number three in the AFC West, I will go with San Diego Chargers. San Diego Chargers passed for 256 yards a game in 2014. Philip Rivers looked pretty good. I mean, for being, what, 32, 33 years old, he looked pretty good. But the Chargers couldn't run the ball. And so they went 9-7. And then they went out in the draft, and they drafted a 6'1", 215-pound running back out of Wisconsin named Melvin Gordon. And he's going to fix it. He's going to fix that running game that couldn't get going all year. Here's the problem. So far, and I know it's just preseason. I've told you my feelings on preseason. Really, really hard to read. Melvin Gordon has looked like, like Chris Johnson. And I'm not talking about like 2000 now or 2009 Chris Johnson. I'm talking about Chris Johnson like now. Where like he can't push a pile. He can't move anybody. He's not quite strong enough. I don't know if I like that pick. And I know the history of Wisconsin running backs. You know, the Terrell Fletchers and the Ron Danes. I know how that all goes. I don't know if Melvin Gordon's going to fix your running problem, San Diego Chargers. Antonio Gates is another year older, which makes him, what, 58, 59, I think, this year. The defense struggled against the run last year. Pretty good against the pass, but they struggled against the run. Here's the problem for the Chargers. You have two teams in the Denver Broncos and the Kansas City Chiefs that are going to be looking to run the ball down your throat every single time they play you. I think that bumps the Chargers back to third in the AFC West. My final team in the AFC West would be the Oakland Raiders. You know, think about this. With quarterback Derek Carr, they got linebacker Khalil Mack. They picked up wide receiver Amari Cooper. Are the Raiders slowly assembling a contender? No, they're not. They're not. But they're at least starting to resemble an actual NFL franchise. And let's be honest, Raider fan, your expectations have changed. You look at 6-10, you're like, that's not bad. 6-10? I would take 6-10 in a minute. So that's just how these things go these days. I mean, that's just kind of where the Raider Nation is these days. You're going to be pretty excited if you hit 6-10. I mean, next year, you'll be talking about contending for the Super Bowl if you can go 6-10 this year. Let's jump over to our final division to touch on the NFC West. The NFC West, one of the toughest divisions in the NFL. First on my list, I would go with the Seattle Seahawks. I told you, I think there is a chance that Seattle takes a step backward, especially the way that they lost that Super Bowl game. I think they could take a step back. They did get tight end Jimmy Graham, but they did give up center Max Unger. Now, Jimmy Graham should help the Seattle offense. And I know that people have already been talking about how, what would Jimmy Graham have looked like down in that Super Bowl situation? They're down on the goal line. You could have thrown it up to him. He could have went and got it. But let's think about something. We've all seen just how much Jimmy Graham has been winning games in New Orleans, haven't we? I'm not sure I'm buying into Jimmy Graham fixing everything. The Legion of Boom. Legion of Boom could be losing Cam Chancellor. Seattle Seahawks are shopping Cam Chancellor because, you know, for so long, they've gotten away with paying Russell Wilson a very, very minimal amount of money. Now that they've had to step up and pay him, you're going to start losing some of these guys. Because when you think of all the talent that Seattle has, especially on that defensive side, the Earl Thomases, going to want to get paid. Cam Chancellor, going to want to get paid. Richard Sherman, getting paid. The money's going to start running out here very, very soon. The Super Bowl curse could strike the Seattle Seahawks big time this year. I could see Seattle taking a step back. I'm taking them to finish first in this division. But don't be surprised if this number two team comes up and bites them. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to go with number two, the Arizona Cardinals. They had a ton of injuries in 2014. They lost Carson Palmer with the knee injury for the year. They lost Calais Campbell, the defensive end. They lost Andre Ellington. They lost Tyrann Mathieu. They still made the playoffs at 11-5 in a very, very tough division. Can they better 11-5 if they had anyone healthy? Maybe not, but they might not have to because this year, they don't have to play quite as tough of a schedule. And they just having someone like Carson Palmer, when you looked at their backup quarterback situation last year, that was as bad of a backup quarterback situation as I've ever seen. Having Carson Palmer back this year, they could find a way to win the NFC West and get themselves into the playoffs. And just by going 11-5, 10-6, somewhere in that area might be enough. Number three in the NFC West, I'm going to go with the St. Louis Rams, another dark horse team that could contend in this division. Doesn't it just seem like they go 7-9 every single year under Jeff Fisher? Every single year. But I will say this, maybe Nick Foles picks up another win or two. I can't tell. Nick Foles, Sam Bradford, I don't even know if they might be the same person. I don't know. The St. Louis Rams did draft Todd Gurley, who probably just got hurt again as I said his name, but he should be better. He does give, if he's healthy, if Todd Gurley stays healthy, he should give them a little more punch in their running game, and we know that the Rams have a very, very good defense. Lastly, our final team of our NFL preview this year, number four to go in the NFC West, I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers. First, for the Niners, let me give you the bad news. I've got some good news and I've got some bad news. First off, let's get to the bad news for the San Francisco 49ers. You lost your coach, Jim Harbaugh. You lost linebacker, Chris Borland. You lost cornerback, Parrish Cox. You lost wide receiver, Michael Crabtree. You lost running back, Frank Gore. You lost cornerback, Chris Culver. You lost guard, Mikey Iupati. You lost defensive end, Ray McDonald. You lost linebacker, Patrick Willis. You lost Aldon Smith. The San Francisco 49ers have lost a lot of people, but here is the good news. There is no good news. Sorry about that. As we do every single week, let's jump over to our Daily Dose Top 5. And our Daily Dose Top 5 comes to us this week from Mike in SoCal. Mike in SoCal emailed me. Mike is a pretty regular contributor to the show. We have a couple Mikes that contribute to the show, but Mike is a pretty regular contributor to the show. And he emailed me, and he was talking about, we were talking about some of the greatest hitters in NFL history. And then we kind of started talking about, well, who are the greatest hitters like right now? And I'm going to be honest, we couldn't come up with any greatest hitters right now. Cam Chancellor? Rashad Jones down at Miami, TJ Ward maybe here in Denver. I don't know. The game has changed so completely. You can't be a hitter in the NFL anymore. Hitters are as extinct as the dinosaurs because of the rules, because of the way that they officiate these games. We don't have hitters anymore. So I'm going to go through today and we're going to count down the five greatest hitters in NFL history. But I'm telling you right now, We don't have greatest hitters anymore. These are going to be the greatest hitters ever of all time. Done deal. Because it is over. That part of football has ended. And here in a few years, they're probably going to be playing flag football. And I understand. I'm not complaining. I understand these guys, the issues they have, the head injuries, the physical ailments. I'm not necessarily arguing against it. I'm just saying it doesn't happen anymore. We don't have great hitters anymore. Doesn't exist. They have been legislated out of the league. Let's count down the Daily Dose top five greatest hitters. Number five on our list. Got to go. He played for the Rams. He played for the Cardinals. He played for the Lions. And it's before my time. I'll admit it. It's before my time. But I've gone back and looked at the film. And Dick Night Train Lane was absolutely vicious. The videos that you see of Dick Night Train Lane, they are violent hits. He was a guy that they had to ban clotheslining for. The horse collar was still legal, but clotheslining, he would just go by and just try to get guys' necks everywhere he went. They used to call it the Night Train Necktie, and I'm telling you right now, if you go Google search Dick Night Train Lane and some of his hits, they are violent, horrible hits. Definitely one of the greatest hitters of all time. Number four, I'm going to stay here in Denver, and I know you can call me a homer if you want to. I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos, Steve Atwater. You know, everyone remembers the Christian Okoye hit. You know, that was back, what, like 93 or something. Christian Okoye, the big giant 260-pound running back for the Kansas City Chiefs, comes through the hole. Atwater popped him, knocked him backwards. That isn't even the play that stands out. As much as that play put him on the map, and as much as that play has been replayed, I want you to think about the way that Steve Atwater played in Super Bowl 32. Couple plays I want you to keep in mind in that game. Super Bowl 32, when the Broncos played the Packers, upset the Green Bay Packers in that Super Bowl. The first touchdown of the game, the Packers go right down the field, and Brett Favre hits Antonio Freeman in the back of the end zone. Steve Atwater tattoos him on that play. Now, that might not seem like much, but you have to remember the Denver Broncos had been to the Super Bowl and failed miserably. It made me wonder when he hit him, this looks a little different, because I remember the losses to the Redskins, to the Giants, you know, to the 49ers when, you know, these guys were catching and making plays and no one ever made them pay for it. Atwater popped him in the back of the end zone, one of the first plays of the game. He had the big sack on Brett Favre, caused a fumble. And then late in the game, just a, you know, 30 seconds left in the game or something, Packers are driving. Steve Atwater actually knocks out Darian Gordon, his teammate, Robert Brooks, and himself on one play. You actually see Atwater make this collision with his teammate, and you see his whole body just goes dead, and he just hits the ground. Steve Atwater was a hitter. You had to be aware of where he was. They called him the Smiling Assassin. He would knock you out anywhere on the field. Number three on my list, and I know I'm going to have some people argue that this guy should be higher, but it's my list. When you make a list, you put him where you want to. I'm going to go with Chicago Bears, Dick Butkus. Dick Butkus was just an absolutely ferocious tackler. And I'll be honest, a lot of the plays, when I go back and I watch, you know, some of the YouTube videos and stuff of Dick Butkus, this is a guy that was kind of going out of his way trying to injure you. Giants general manager Ernie Accorsi, he described Dick Butkus maybe the best way you could describe him. When he hit you, you stayed hit. Kind of a good way to describe Dick Butkus, who comes in at number three. Number two on our list, I'm going to go with San Francisco 49er safety Ronnie Lott. You know, Ronnie Lott started as a cornerback. He was shifted to safety, and he actually was built and played like a linebacker. Dude had no problem sacrificing his own body to just knock someone out or just put his body on the line. He would throw himself into violent collisions. I'm sure you are aware of the story that he had a piece of his pinky dangling off of his finger that they were afraid was going to keep him out of the game. So he went over and, cut it off himself. Ronnie Lott, one of the toughest and most ferocious hitters. Again, if wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, if you were going to be in Ronnie Lott's area, your head had to be on a swivel because he was going to come take your head off. Number one on my list, the Daily Dose top five greatest hitters, I am going to give to the Oakland Raiders, Jack Tatum. Now, I want to throw out just a couple of brief stories about Jack Tatum to describe to you why he is on my list. First off, if you ever watch the old clips, I want you to be very, very aware of what is on his forearms. Because his forearms, he always had the tape going up from wrist, you know, to elbow. I don't think that was just tape. I'm going to be honest. I think there was probably, I don't know, maybe a hardening agent. There was something going on there because he used his arms like battering rams and he would just club guys in the head with those forearms. You might not know, and again, this is one you kind of have to watch the YouTube video of, but when Jack Tatum was playing, he had a move that he called, I believe he called it the hook. And what he would do, and if you watch some of the old clips, you'll see him do it. What Jack Tatum would do when he hit wide receivers, he would try to get his arm around their head, and right as he was going by them, he would flex it and tighten it and try to pop their helmet off of their head. I believe, like I said, he called that the hook. If you keep an eye on some of those old YouTube videos of Jack Tatum, you will see him trying to remove guys' helmets off their head. He did it quite a bit. Pittsburgh Steelers coach Chuck Knoll, he actually was trying to pursue criminal charges, saying there was a criminal element to the game that Jack Tatum played. You know, if you remember the immaculate reception, the pass from Terry Bradshaw to Frenchie Fuqua that got deflected over Franco Harris catches it, Tatum absolutely crushed Frenchie Fuqua, the wide receiver on that play. I still think that play was illegal just by how the play was. But anyways, Jack Tatum, probably the most vicious and nasty hitter that I've ever seen. Saw him in a full-on head-on collision with Earl Campbell, the huge running back down at Houston. They both kind of teetered and tipped over sideways. And of course, we remember the horrible situation we talked about, you know, with the preseason game where Daryl Stingle, the wide receiver for the New England Patriots, was paralyzed. Jack Tatum was a vicious, vicious hitter. And if you were on the field against him, it was very, very scary, something that you knew he was coming and he was looking for you. He was going to try to inflict punishment on you. Jack Tatum, our hardest hitter on the Daily Dose Top 5. And like I said, we're not getting any great hitters anytime soon. They are dinosaurs. They are gone. Got to say thank you to Mike out in SoCal for throwing that list out to us, talking about great hitters. If you have a suggestion, you know, email us, hit me on Twitter, hit me on Facebook. You know, let me run down those real quick. Twitter at Daily Dose Sports, same thing for Facebook. And if you would like to email me, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Hey, next week on the show, we will be recapping college football and we will be talking about the first week of the NFL. It is finally here. Should be an exciting season. We also got to get into some Major League Baseball, and it just always seems like there's new things coming out in the world of sports. If you get a chance, go on iTunes, give us a rating, give us a review, give us that 5-star rating. We do appreciate that. That helps us just get heard and seen by a few more people. As usual, I have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this without you. I appreciate you all listening. I hope you enjoyed the NFL preview. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you next week.